This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
All right, hello again, Producers Podcast, episode 56, I believe. 56 here. So I've done a few of them. Not running out of people to talk to, though. Jerry Rohira is the interview this time. It goes in two parts. And yeah, we talked for a while. I cut it down a little bit, but really, I mean, I found it all to be very interesting. So we went a little over an hour, and you're going to get that in two parts. I will say, not a shortage of great people to talk to. My list continues to grow, even though I continue to, you know, knock some of these big names out that I've always wanted to talk to. One of which, Mike Madrigal. I actually was able to meet him finally. I've known of him for quite a while. He is one of the two, I believe there are two main owners of Short Bus. There could be more. Well, we will figure all that out in my next interview, which will be with Mike. But I finally met him a couple of years ago out in Los Angeles. Really good guy. And so I haven't done the interview yet, but I think that'll be a pretty exciting one as well. And he's been a pretty major player in the world of radio imaging with the success of Short Bus Radio. He is, I believe he's listed, I'm friends with him on Facebook, for example, as the owner slash CFO slash producer at Short Bus Radio. So yes, the guy still knows his way around a DAW. But he knows his way around the business side of this thing as well. So that'll be a pretty solid, dare I say, power player interview on the Producers Podcast coming up next. I mentioned that I will have John Carter as a guest a while back, a couple few months ago, and he's still on the slate. Extremely busy guy, but I still have him in line, and we will get that interview to go more on the voiceover side of radio imaging. And he does tons of commercial work at all. Lots of other stuff as well. So look forward to that one. And then I was talking to a new-ish friend of mine, Mike Bratton, a highly successful voiceover talent. I believe he does. He's more, you know, wide-ranging, a little outside the world of radio imaging. But out of New York City, a very talented voiceover guy. And so we'll talk to him soon as well. So there's a handful of things on the slate. For right now, though, Jerry Rohira was basically, he started as an intern. It just happened to be in the small little market of Houston. Pretty quickly worked his way up as the imaging producer there. And then he moved on to New York City, where he worked for Sirius for quite a long time. And then he decided to take a nice step back and just be the vice president of production of Merlin Media. A lot of major gigs under his belt. We'll learn about everything he has done and what he is doing. And we will kick it off with, actually, I decided to start it off with some of his most recent work, the stuff he's doing for The Buzz in Houston right now. Yes, he has come full circle, and he is now also producing the imaging for The Buzz. We'll hear some of that great work and get into the interview with the one and only Jerry Rohira.
KTBZ.
FM.
KTBZ.
FM.
KTBZ.
FM.
KTBZ FM Houston.
From the Coors Light Studios, we are 94.5 The Buzz. Your music gets angry if you don't get back to it fast enough.
I'm home! No! No! Bad dubstep! Don't make me!
From the Coors Light Studios,
let's get back to it.
We're back to the music.
94.5 The Buzz.
This is news.
It has been discovered that kangaroos have three vaginas. And this is Buzz Music.
This is 94.5 The Buzz.
Buzzfest.
Buzzfest 30.
Shinedown.
Bush.
Stone Sour.
Papa Roach.
Sick Puppies.
P.O.D.
Hollywood Undead.
The Dirty Head.
Youngblood Hawk.
Oleander.
Beware of Darkness.
A Silent Film.
The Virgin Mary.
I Am Dynamite. And more.
So how much you think people like Buzzfest?
Well, more than a couple mandolin-playing idiots trying to sell some insurance, I'll tell you what.
Yep, sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
Buzzfest 30.
This film has not yet been rated. From the makers of Buzzfest 1 through 29.
We're spending billions of dollars. We are still no closer to defeating our enemy.
20 detainees recognize that photo.
Yeah, that's him! That's the guy who took my tickets!
No birth certificate, no cell phone, the guy's a ghost.
It's the search for the most wanted man in the world. And Buzzfest tickets.
When was the last time you saw Bin Laden?
I already told you when he took my tickets!
Zero Dark Buzzfest 30.
When was the last time you saw Bin Laden?
Please, no more.
Thursday, maybe. I don't know. I just want to go to BuzzFest 30.
And now, a Mexican spelling bee.
Spell Buzz.
B-U-Z.
That is incorrect. It's KTBZ, FM Houston.
There's no K in Buzz.
Chulos, your family now belongs to me.
What kind of spelling bee is this?
Take him away.
From the Coors Light Studios.
Esto es 94.5.
The Buzz.
This is 94.5. The Buzz.
You miserable maggots! I don't ever want to see your back to the music! Don't you ever turn your back to the music!
From the Coors Light Studios, we're back to the music.
Let's go!
94.5, The Buzz.
Yeah!
Go! Today's new rock alternative.
94.5, The Buzz.
All right, there's some hot new audio from The Buzz, Houston, Jerry Rohira. Hey, first of all, I forgot to ask you off the air. Did I say your last name right, Rohira?
Yeah. Yeah, you're one of the few people who actually say it right. They hear Rohira or read Rohira and think that I'm Japanese. I'm not Japanese. Not that Japanese people aren't cool.
Jerry Rohira, man, appreciate you doing the show with me. I actually wanted to get you on, maybe 2 years ago-ish. And, you know, you got super busy, and then I hit you up again, and we made time. So anyway, thanks, man. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, man, I'm glad to be here. It's stoked.
Yeah. So let's see here. I've got, obviously, my list of stuff I want to talk about, and I'm thinking you've kind of only been in major jobs. I mean, well, you started maybe as, you know, like a part-timer or something, but essentially you've only been in major stations or major gigs. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, I haven't really been in a smaller market like a resident. I've done some work for smaller markets, but
right.
from a bigger city. Yeah.
And you started in Houston, is that true?
Yep, H-Town.
Yep, and you started at was it The Buzz back then?
I started at The Buzz as a production intern. Really quick side stupid story. I wanted to go into radio because I saw it on Frasier, and you know, and that chick Roz, like she answers the phones, and I was being pressured by my dad to come up with a really cool major at school. So you know, and I didn't want to be the traditional Indian doctor, engineer, or lawyer. I thought radio would be way cooler. And I saw, you know, because of the music, and then I saw an episode of Frasier, and I saw Roz up there taking the phones, and I was like, well, I don't want to be the dude in the booth, but I can take phones. Like, what's her title? And then I heard him refer to her as a producer, so I thought production. So I called The Buzz, and I said, I want to be a production intern. And next thing you know, I'm in a studio with, like, you know, $100,000 worth of equipment and no phone. And I'm like, how am I supposed to use any of this? And the one thing I need to use is not around here. But that's how I got into production and radio.
And this is, you know, are you in college at this point? You said intern. Did you go to college? When was this?
Yeah. This is in 1999. I was at school at Houston Baptist University, and that was part of their internship program.
Did you graduate college, or did you leave it for the glamorous life of radio?
Oh, I left it for the glamorous life of radio. Yeah. I wasn't really Baptist or collegiate, so, you know, radio was just perfect.
So I bring up the markets. So we'll eventually get to your major jobs. You'll eventually get to Sirius and Merlin and et cetera. But we were actually talking a little bit before the interview here. You never had those sort of jumping around jobs where you worked in the market 113, whatever that is, or, you know, in your mid-level markets. And you were saying you almost sort of regret that, or you miss that fact. Are you saddened that you... And is there anything about small market radio that you love and you wish you could have experienced?
Oh, yeah. I mean, totally. Just because I didn't work in small markets, you know, doesn't mean I didn't listen to small market radio. I had a girlfriend when I was in Houston who lived up in Waco. She went to school at Baylor. So, of course, that's a 3-hour drive. So I would drive through College Station, you know, listen to A&M's station, radio, whatever, and on the way to Waco. And there was some really generic stuff that was really terrible. But then there was some really wacky stuff that I was like, wow, that's pretty out there. And I don't know if many people are going to get that. And it might take two or three times for that to spin before someone's like, oh, I understand what that is now. And, you know, I always like stuff like that. You know, telling someone it's new music is like, well, yeah. Well, I don't need you to tell me that. I can just listen to it. You know, telling me in a clever way that makes me think and laugh and remember it later, that's cool. So I think smaller markets can actually get away with that. And I personally love to travel, even if it's a 3-hour tour to another Texas city. That's still traveling, and it's cool, and I get to stare out the window, you know, and look at cows and whatever else is out there. And I just kind of like it. I think it's kind of cathartic, and it just kind of clears my mind. But yeah, you know, I miss the fact that I didn't get to go to smaller markets. Like, I wanted, my goal was to do a tour to New York, Chicago, LA. But I wanted to do smaller towns too, like in the middle of the country, you know, whatever's in, I mean, not to, you know, I don't know my geography, so I can't really name anything in Nebraska besides Omaha. But something like that, you know, I wouldn't have mind to be in even smaller market than Omaha, much smaller than Omaha. I've always wanted to do stuff like that because that's cool. I mean, you can get away with some really cool stuff. And if you are the station there that's dominating, it sounds cool. You're the man, too. You might even get laid. That's quite possible.
Yeah, that's quite possible.
Yeah, and let's face facts. That's what this is all about. That's what this is all about.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, that'll wrap it up. That's all we need to hear. No, so that's cool. But obviously, there's some pretty exciting things that happen in the big gigs. So you started out there, as you said, an intern in Houston. You ended up getting into the imaging world. When you were first starting out, and this may translate to today as well, though now it's been, you know, almost, what, 13 years or so. What are some of the things you did to learn your skills? Because as you said, you saw it on TV. So I'm guessing you weren't already real savvy, you know, on a computer. What are some of the things you did to learn the skills, to teach yourself? Who did you learn from? Some of those things.
Yeah, I knew nothing. It was insane. I knew nothing about production whatsoever. I interned under a guy. His name is Terry DiDonato. He unfortunately no longer in the business because we all know radio has the field of play is narrowed significantly. So some people who, you know, he could have gone somewhere else, but I think he was just done. He was at Clear Channel Houston for like 17 years, and then he was just like, you know, it's time to move on. He was a super creative guy who we vibed together really well. Super creative guy, and he, you know, when you feel that connection, you know, between intern and mentor, sometimes it can just be like, okay, well, you're here to do your thing. I need you to do the free work that I need you to do and then get out. That wasn't there. You know, there was that responsibility, of course, but he still took the time to explain stuff to me and explain to me why things were and why, you know, where the post was and where the beats are. Like, I had to learn what the sound of a snare hit was. It was almost like I was the Helen Keller of radio imaging. I knew nothing about it whatsoever. And he would scrub wheel over the sound of a snare or the sound that the letter K makes or what the T is and how those show up in waveforms. And, you know, that was cool. That was better than the education that I was getting at school, which all they talked about for radio was Howard Stern. Well, look at that. No one talked to me about how to design something for the radio station, how to create a sonic wall and do theater of the mind and to, you know, see it on the radio, that type of stuff. He taught me the basics. I learned on like the Orban Odyssey, that huge thing that you source in and source out and dest in and dest out, that archaic thing that I think you couldn't even sell for like a Coca-Cola now. I learned on that, and there was the imaging guy at the Buzz. His name was John Diego. He was the creative force there, and you know the stuff he made was really wacky and weird, and it was kind of fun stuff. And you know, he started noticing that my personality was weird and a little quirky and out there. So he started asking me if I could do little characters here and there, and if I could, he would be like, okay, what if I wanted to have some guy at a store and he's ordering something, or he wants to buy a pair of pants, but he has a really bad lisp or something, you know? So I would just do improv stuff with him, you know, in a private setting, in his studio, and you know, it got very comfortable. So he started using me a lot, and I started learning some of the creative side from him. Coupled with the basics and the fundamentals that Terry taught me, which, you know, he was the commercial production guy. So I learned how to do all kinds of spots and dubs and stuff like that. And then you take that education and then you start, you know, factoring the creative and you can start doing imaging. Years later, maybe about 2 years after I started, John Diego up and leaves and pursues a voiceover career, a successful voiceover career. Now he lives out in Los Angeles doing just that. So the Buzz needed a production person to do the imaging, and that's when I stepped up. And this is right around the time, maybe within 6 months or so, Frostbites it got released. So I was introduced to the mind of John Frost, and that was the biggest inspiration. you know.
Did you become a subscriber to Frostbites? Is that how you became accustomed to his demented brain?
Yeah. See, I knew nothing. See, that's another thing about the business. I knew nothing about anybody or anyone. I mean, you know, I didn't know who Kevin Weatherly was or John Frost or Kevin and Bean or, I mean, even, you know, you want to name big people now? I mean, I didn't know it. It's not to say that I didn't care to know it or that they're not important. I was ignorant. I was just ignorant on the subject. I had no idea. Now you ask me, I can name some big people like John Frost. And then I realized, oh, this guy did a lot more than the CD sampler I got in the mail. He did a shit ton more. And that's when I was like, you know, really blown away by the guy's skills and how he could translate the stuff that no one else could. So I took a lot of license from him, a lot of learning from him, a lot of learning from Malcolm Riker, and those were my two main ones that I really took a lot of inspiration from. And quite honestly, a lot from, you know, some of my favorite cartoons of all time. What those guys did, Malcolm Riker and John Frost, is they gave me permission and showed me how to translate the thoughts that I had. Because they were the only ones doing that. I'm like, how do I make this? How do I make this? What's the sound of someone blinking? Oh, the xylophone going really slow. I wanted to have the sound of someone waiting and blinking or someone tapping their foot. What's the sound of that in a cartoon way? How do I translate that? They taught me how to translate that, and they gave me permission to say, it's okay to do that. And if someone doesn't get it, it's okay. It's not the end of the world. Not everyone is going to get this kind of production. It's not, this is new music. No, there's a creative theater of the mind behind it, and not everyone is allowed inside that theater. It only holds so many people.
Yeah, I'd agree. Listening to your stuff, I think animated is one of many good adjectives to describe your work. It's more than just noises. It's very you're a good storyteller with what you do. So from Houston now, I mean, if we could, we might jump ahead here. Do you go directly to Sirius XM, I mean, or XM, I should say, or what are your stops in there?
Well, what happened is 2004, early 2004, there was one of the ladies that worked in at the Buzz. She left and she went over to Sirius, and Sirius was scouting some people, and she was like, "You should give this guy a shout." She was talking to the production guy over there, and he had passed on a bunch of other people. His name is Mitch Todd. I think you interviewed him before, right?
Yep.
He gave me a shout, you know, and he was like, "You know, I got your name. Or would you be interested?" And I was like, yeah, cool. Let's see what happens. I thought, if nothing else, at least I can get some more money out of the Buzz. You know, I mean, I wasn't really considering. And Sirius wasn't anything. Sirius was nothing then. You know, and my goal was, at this point, at 2004, I knew enough about radio to appreciate it. So at this point, my goal, like any other production person, was to work for 92.3 K-Rock in New York or K-Rock LA. But John Frost had that market. So it's like, I want the one in New York, you know, that type of stuff. So if I was like, I'm going to go to New York, it's going to be for that. So I saw Sirius as either I could boost my salary here in Houston, or at least I can maybe, you know, swing from the New York branch Sirius.
Get into the market.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then find your way into the
foot
station.
Foot in the door, and then maybe I could just tell CBS, yo, you know, you save on moving costs, movie over. So,
Right. I live three blocks away. Just
exactly.
Letting you know.
I'm coming
here
right
anytime.
Now.
Yeah.
So Mitch was cool about it. You know, he was like, you know, this is what we can do. You know, he said, put together some pieces for me. And then, you know, that was him. And I remember him years later telling me, he's like, oh, that whole thing was a test. It was all just a big test. And I'm totally blowing up his spot. If anyone's listening to any of his future employees listening to this, he'll ask you to make some pieces. And he says, you know, take your time and do whatever you want. No rush and no boundaries. Do whatever you want. He's testing you to see what you can write, how fast you can write it, and how fast you get it back to him. And how good it is. It's all one big giant test.
Yeah, just to jump in, I don't know if he said the speed was an issue, but he definitely talked about that. And anyone, there's a lot of people listening that have applied for gigs over there, and I know he still does that, still wants custom stuff, and he gives you like three or four stations. Yeah, but that's a good tip to know that just because he says take in as much time as you want, he does want to see your efficiency, not just your creativity.
Yeah, he wants to see how serious you take it too. No pun intended. He wants to see how, you know, how serious you are about the stuff and how fast you get it back. And he wants to see how much he has to work with you, because not everyone's going to have the serious mentality of programming and production. So he's trying to get a gauge as to like how bad it's going to be or how much he has to clockwork orange, you know, D deprogram you or reprogram you, essentially, however you want to look at it.
I don't want to cut off any cool aspects of the story, but you do take the job at Sirius pretty quickly at this point then, right?
Yeah, real quick, came up for the interview, and actually, which is kind of interesting, you know, things at Sirius happened notoriously slow. This actually, the whole interview courtship process, fly up for an interview, put me in a hotel, fly back down and pay for the move, all happened within 30 days. So by the end of May 10th was my first day, I think. May 10th, 2004 was my first day at Sirius.
So that's great. So you end up heading to, okay, so this is Sirius, though. This is before the merger, and you were never at XM until they were together, right? You were at Sirius from the get-go.
Right, right.
And did you know much of, okay, so at this point, you've only worked for one station as an intern and then imaging guy, you know, the creative services director, whatever they called you, but whatever. You've been at one station in Market 9 or whatever they were. And now you're not only moving to a big market, but you're moving to a whole new platform. Did you think about competition? You know, like, all right, I'm not working for, you know, an alternative station with enemies in the market so much as I'm working for a platform with another platform enemy? Or did you just put all that out of your mind and just be creative and say, what do you want me to do?
I see. My whole thing is, I know that there is, which I, and I love it. I love the, you know, the whole game of radio and, you know, going after stations.
Yeah.
And I love that stuff. I was never really good at
it,
but I sure as hell enjoyed it when anyone did it. And if I could, you know, be involved in tipping over a van that no one's inside of, I'm all about that. I don't care. But
right.
As far as the production went, even though my stuff might sound like it's, you know, I'll come after someone and just slay them and hurt them and make them feel bad, it's not on purpose. I mean, well, yeah, it sort of is on purpose. I take that back. But it's not like I woke up that morning and I'm like, oh, I'm going to make this dude cry. It's like, no, I kind of know that I want to take a jab at someone and I'll come in and sort of reverse engineer something. But it's not like I'm really good at, you know, going after them. I just want to make something good and something funny. Like, you know, if I'm going to go after someone, there's a reason for it. It's not just I'm going after someone just because I want to go after someone. That's kind of bullying. You know, I'll go after something like a Kanye. Why? Because Kanye deserves it. You know, if someone deserves it, it almost makes it funny automatically. Even if it's not all that funny, it almost makes it funny if you deserve it. So for going after someone for no reason, you know, it didn't really do it for me. But I just kind of did my thing, and you know, if someone got hurt in the process,
how did it work though? Would you have? I mean, I know how it worked later because I talked to Mitch recently. But did you, when you signed on, you know, when they hired you and you're like, all right, you're full time, here's your studio, you're, you know, it's Jerry Rohr here, it's at Sirius, here's 17 stations, go. Or did it feel a little more comfortable than that, where they kind of eased you in and you really felt creative and you know, like a comfortable place to work and have fun?
Yeah, actually, it was a little bit of both. In the beginning, like I said earlier, I'm not sure if that was part of the interview or if we were just offhand talking, but in the very beginning of Sirius in the early days, and even if you talk to people who have been there for decades, or at least over a decade, they'll tell you that back in the day, like Sirius was very free-flowing. They actually had musicologists instead of programmers and stuff like that. So it was very, like, free-thinker, and it was very cool like that. So I came on the cusp of that right before Stern came. So it was a little bit of have a lot of fun and do whatever you want. But it was also like I saw it like this is cool and it's a challenge. Like I'm not just making a piece of production for this alternative station. I got to make something that sounds completely different for this heavy rock station and then for the metal station and then for the alternative 70s station. And I saw it like it was a challenge and it was kind of cool. And I really enjoy the challenge. Like I really did enjoy having different formats thrown at me at Sirius because it felt like I wasn't getting stale. You know, I wasn't making the same new music promo for the same station for 10 years. I did reggae once, and then I did you know, vinyl once, and then I did Rolling Stones once, and then I did Jay-Z the other day. And you know, that stuff was that was like a typical month at Sirius. You know, I did a lot of different things, which to some people could seem arduous and overwhelming, but to those who enjoy it, you know, like there's bureaucracy everywhere you go, and there's going to be, you know, drama everywhere you go. But for me, even if there's like, you know, a fire outside, I'm inside my screen when I'm producing. Like I'm thinking about what needs to be done, and I don't really care, you know, if someone is making more than me or if someone got a day off and I have to be there. I'm kind of busy having a good time with what I do. And that's the really shitty part about this industry is that it's waning, but I still love what I do with a passion.
How much outside stuff had you started doing, if any? And then when you went to Sirius, was that a big shock, like you just said, having all these new formats and different types of projects for you to do? I mean, you said you loved it, but, you know, what was your tasks like outside of The Buzz and then Sirius?
It was pretty tough. I was by the time I left The Buzz, I was doing The Buzz. I was doing producing or imaging the mix station there. And I had just landed a freelance Buzz account in Sarasota, Florida. So on top of those three things, I took on the nine stations that Sirius threw at me. So it was pretty hectic for a long time. And for a while, it was hard to stay above water. But see, that's the thing, though, about Sirius is that it taught me to – it was basically a sink or swim kind of thing. And and I swam. I wasn't going to sink. And Sirius can be – it all depends on how you look at it. It can be a mill of you just making the same things day in and day out. Or you could look at it as, you know, how do I make the same thing different as a creative person? I mean, you could be miserable with making the same New Year's Eve promo, or you could be challenging yourself with, how do I make this damn thing different this time? I'm so sick of Auld Lang Syne. What else is there? Figure something out. I kind of call it the Navy SEALs of production, you know? A lot of people can't hack it, but if you can, you're better for it, and I really feel like I'm better for it. I feel like I was able to, like, it sent me out into the world a lot more confident.
And what did we not bring up? Because I do want to move on to some other things that you've had since then. But something about working there, and also tell me how long you were there for, but something about working there that we haven't talked about that you really took away. I don't know if it was just an individual experience or an overall experience, something good, something bad.
Yeah, working at Sirius, let's see, there's this guy called Howard Stern that I got to work for that was pretty awesome. I took that away.
I've heard of him.
And then working with Stern, I got to work with Sam Simon, which was really awesome. Sam Simon, creator of The Simpsons, one of the creators of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
We did a radio play with all of the characters of The Stern Show, and Sam and I worked together in a small little studio. Here I am with Sam Simon, you know, the guy who's like, after we're done for a week, he's like, I'm going to go to Turks and Caicos and gamble with $100,000, and I'll be back on Monday. Make sure you have this scene done, you know? And I'm just like, you son of a bitch. But it was really a pleasure, like, you know, working with someone who is like, he's insane, but like one of those insane, creative, awesome guys that works for 18 hours a day. And then it would be like a slave driver, right? He would be working my ass off and just listen to take after take and recutting things. And then at 5 o'clock, he would allow me to go home and walk my dogs because he was a big dog. He is a big dog enthusiast. And he said, after you're done walking your dogs and feeding your dogs and loving your dogs, I need you back here in an hour for another 4 hours. We did that for about 6 months, and it was grueling, but it was so rewarding. And, you know, then he signed the script, and I have a copy of the CD and everything, and he drew Bart Simpson on it. And then, you know, we had his assistant working with us for a little while towards the end there, and I got kind of close to him, his assistant Colin. And Colin was like, yo, so, you know, if you can get anything, you know, do you like music or whatever? And I've been playing the bass since I was 16. So one way or another, I mentioned that I liked this one particular acoustic bass. And Sam Simon went out and bought me this like $1,500 bass and had it delivered to the station as a thank you for it. And it's one of the coolest things ever. I had the guitar hanging up on my wall, and I got the signed autograph of the script that we worked on together. And, you know, working for Stern, too, it's like it still pays for itself. You know, there are things that people still hear and they're like, that sounds really good. Can you do that for me and my station?
You were with Stern when he launched on Sirius, right? You helped launch him in some capacity, and maybe even along with Jeff Thomas or something.
Yeah. Sirius did like a tryout of like 5 to 10 different producers. And at the very end of that, I still got a chance to do it. So it was a big honor. And to launch Stern on Sirius was a really big deal because it was all over the place. I mean, the exposure was just, I mean, you couldn't turn on, I mean, even like CNN was talking about it, which was weird, you know? I mean, I guess because it's all over New York, too, and he was making a big deal about it, too. And the payday was huge as well, which is why it made such big headlines. But to launch him was a really cool thing. Yeah, it was like, it was myself and Jeff Thomas. We put together the whole thing. Jeff did a really great job with the soundscape. I handled things locally and did stuff that the station needed. And then after the station was launched up, Jeff and I worked together to maintain it simultaneously.
The producers.